I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts. Hey, friends. Do you suck at art? We know a teacher for you.
That's right. Deb Wheeler Bean is an artist, a writer, a teacher, and an inspiration to many. And to what Sarah was referencing, she has a class that's taught at Art Up Front Street in Exeter called I Suck at Art. And it's specifically for those folks who say, I suck at art. I can't draw a stick figure. I don't know how to do it. Wow, you've got so much talent. I'm sorry, newsflash. Yeah, there's a few folks that have talent, but a lot of us, it's just gosh darn work. It's just trial and error and practice. It's a lot of practice and being open enough to get inspiration from others. And Deb is really great at harnessing that and allowing folks who think it's just not possible to see it is possible.
She's also the like warm hippie art teacher that if you didn't have, you like wish you did.
Yeah.
Her and I are kindred spirits, which you will hear a lot in this episode.
They're both hippies. Wicked.
This was a barefoot episode with lots of hippie, warm, fuzzy feelings.
No shoes were worn.
Or sandals.
No shoes were worn in the making of this episode. Oh my God. It's true. It's just cheesy when you say it like that. And check out her stuff in person. She is actually the main exhibitor at Art Up Front Street right now. And so the front right wall, when you walk in, will have all of her beautiful work. And then you can get even more of it in studio number 4. Please enjoy this very interesting episode with Deb Wheeler Bean. Welcome, Deb Wheeler Bean, to the Creative Guts podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We're so happy that you have time in your busy summer schedule to meet with us.
It's true. It's been a busy summer already.
Yeah.
Is this your first post-retirement interview?
It is.
Oh, we got you right out the gate.
It is. Feels good.
Yeah. That's a coup.
I'm going to pull a Sarah and kick off my shoe. Yeah. Oh, we're all barefoot now.
Right away.
I was the last one.
The barefoot podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, if you did a podcast on your own, that's what it would be called.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I'd have to be on that because I never wear shoes, ever.
We talk about that in our intro episode. Because
I love this.
She came to work, like she started working at the office that I work at and immediately started walking around barefoot.
This was my first office job with other people. And so I didn't know that there was some sort of like decorum.
So why don't you begin by telling us about yourself and, you know, what you do as a creative?
Well, I just retired, and I'm putting that in air quotes, from teaching at a public school. And I don't even like to say the word retired because it seems like you're stopping working, and I'll always work. I say to my sister and anyone who'll listen, work is not a four-letter word. I have life's work. I've always had life's work. So it's been good. But I just retired from public school teaching this past June. So I'm going from full-time teaching to and part-time art making to full-time art making and part-time teaching. And
oh, really?
Yeah. It's super exciting to me to be able to come to a studio every day and just make, create. Use it all up is my theme for the year.
Oh, nice.
Because I acquire things.
Yep. A collector.
I'm a collector, and I don't want to collect anymore until I use up what I have.
Oh, that's a great, that's a really great goal to
that
have.
That sounds hard.
I'm not thinking it's going to be easy because I have attachments to things. I try really hard not to, but I find things and I think they're beautiful and I squirrel them away in boxes and then I pull them out and look at them and it is just time to get them out of the boxes.
Yep. Well, that's really exciting. How long were you a teacher for?
I was a teacher for 16 years.
Wow.
16, yeah.
What school were you at?
I started in Newfields, New Hampshire for 3 years and then I was at Lincoln Street in Exeter. For the last 13, yeah.
I'm sure I'm not supposed to ask this yet because it's like way down the question list, but I really want to know about being an art teacher and your students and if there are students who you still talk to or students who have become artists who come back and talk to you.
You know, there have been so many students who have come back and talked to me and so many stories about just keeping them open to being creative. I think one of the most powerful stories I heard, though, I ran into a former student. He was a sophomore at the time. And I wasn't about to approach him in public because he was with all his buddies. But he came right to me and he was like, "Hey, do you remember me?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course I remember you, Alex." And because I used to see him in ball games. And he said to me, "Well, I need to tell you that art has never been fun since I left your class."
Oh.
When I asked him, I said, "Well, do you still make art?" And he said, "No, but I remember art, and I remember art being really fun in elementary school," which was both heartwarming and sad.
Yeah, I was going to say sweet, but sad.
Very sad. But that's, you know, to have that type of an influence, like even to let them come away with it saying it's fun is hugely important.
Absolutely.
It has to be joy.
Yeah. Otherwise, why are you doing it?
Oh, I tell you, I used to say jokingly, but totally meaning it, if you're not having fun in elementary school art, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's like the peak joy time in your
it
life,
is.
You know?
It is.
You can just explore all your, you know, your dreams and your fantasies and, yeah, you know, all that stuff.
I feel like my experience in elementary school art is probably similar to how a lot of people felt about their elementary school art, which is that it felt more like craft time,
mm-hmm,
and it was more about like a structured, here's what your product is supposed to look like, and less about like art.
Right, mm-hmm, right. And I tried to have a program that was not like that. Very fine arts based, lots of art history, lots of story, and it was all process.
Yeah.
Always process. It's all about how you're feeling about what you're doing and, mm-hmm, what's the making like, you know, not the end product. And it was probably the weakest part of the program, is we didn't have a lot of product, but that was not a weakness to me. And I don't think it was a weakness to my kids either.
And what age range were you teaching?
I was teaching from 8 years old to 11.
Oh, that's
lovely,
a great
age. Great,
yeah,
age. Yeah. Third grade to fifth grade. It's really good. And we used to have this night called Integrated Arts Night, where we would have artists from the community and artists, student artists, senior artists from Exeter High School. We would showcase the students' artwork, and they would write to a piece of art in the classroom. And a couple of years ago, I think it was our last Integrated Arts Night, I had two students come back, Alex and Gabriella. And they both sat me down and said, "We're going to art school because of you."
That's beautiful.
And it was really, really important to hear that. You know, because you leave them when they're 11 and you don't really know what they do with it.
Right. Yeah, but, you're out of their lives, and they go on to all their new teachers. And
through middle school and high school.
Yeah, so which are tough years.
They are.
Yeah.
So that was a real gift to me that year.
That is so sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about your art.
So when I started making art, I really focused on photography. I used to draw a lot. I never was a painter. It's interesting. I was in my final semester of art school, and I had not taken a painting class. And I said to my advisor, because I was a transfer, so those first two-year classes were transferred, so there were a lot of holes in the program. Mm-hmm. And I said to my advisor, "Shouldn't I, like, if I'm going to graduate with a, you know, bachelor's in fine arts, do you think I should take a painting class?"
Yeah.
and he laughed and said, "Probably." So we did a independent study, which was fine. So very little painting, a lot of printmaking, lots of photography, mm-hmm, which is interesting because I'm really trained to visualize the image, because I'll look at a scene and I'll subtract things away and understand the light and have a really clear idea about what I want it to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then to start, after the photography, I started to make these found object sculptures and to work from nothing and build up to something and let it happen. Took a lot of untraining for me.
Mm-hmm. It's an additive process.
Yeah, and I still struggle with it. I still struggle with letting it evolve.
Wow.
I move it around, and then don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Put it all back in the boxes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to change this year.
Yeah.
I'm going to get through that hump. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, and I use a lot of text because I'm as much of a writer,
mm-hmm,
of a poet, as I am a visual artist. So almost all my pieces have text.
What age did you know you were a creative person and that, you know, the arts was in your future?
I would definitely say high school, probably around 15. I had a really cool, funky, real hippie art teacher. His name was Judy Mars, and she was just awesome. And she could really see that I had something. And she was super supportive without being judgmental. And she didn't have an idea about what my art should look like. She just let me make art.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So it was definitely then.
That's awesome. I remember having an art teacher in high school that was not great. Like, she seemed dejected in her own fulfillment, and it kind of reflected in how she taught.
Yeah.
And I did have a writing teacher that impacted me, and I do a little writing, though I'm more of a visual artist. And Miss Fuller from Freiburg Academy, I emailed her probably like a decade and a half later and told her, you know, how much she meant to me, because it was a nerd shout out. It was like a it was like a sci-fi fantasy literature class. So we read.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I wish I had taken that.
Yeah, so me too. Great. We would often like read the book and then watch the movie and kind of dissect the differences. And we did Willow and Princess Bride and Star Wars. Oh, and
so
it was kind of about the, you know, the mythology.
Yeah.
The process of mythology in more current pieces of work. And it was great. And we got to write our own short stories of sci-fi and stuff. And I came across the story I wrote, which was really ridiculous. But that's what prompted me to email her. And she's like, I remember you, of course. And as a student, I always think there's no way my teacher from like 15 years ago is going to remember me. But it seems like you do recall most of your students. Do you recall all of them? Are there some that sometimes you don't remember? I'm just curious about that. It's not necessarily.
Bear in mind that I have 500 students a year.
That's a huge amount.
Right.
Oh, my God.
So just remembering names is so challenging. I remember, though, it's funny, like, I used to be a bartender, so I might not remember your name, but I would know your drink.
Yep.
So I might not remember their names, but I would remember what they did for a Blue Dog, or I remember how they painted that still life, or what artist painting they did. So it's funny where you lay down the memory.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
I was at the Isles of Shows last summer, the day before I got married, and I ran into this woman, and she goes, "Do you go to Nottingham School?" And I didn't recognize her. At all, not even a little bit, no inkling. And she goes, "I recognized your voice."
Wow.
And I was like, "No way." So this woman apparently was a librarian when I was a kid at Nottingham School. I don't remember her at all.
Wow. That's really funny, because the librarian recognized your voice. Did you talk in the library?
I must have talked in the library.
What a bad kid you are.
I like libraries you can talk in, quite frankly.
Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah, she told you a million times, shh,
shh. You're the girl I had to shush.
There are so many students that you could never forget.
Yeah.
I mean, I have, and I write down their stories. I write them in my journal. You know, I write poems about them.
Oh, so they're influencing your work and what you're producing.
Hugely. When I took a sabbatical 6 years ago, I thought, wow, I can really create during this 6 month time. I was really dry. I always tell them, I am as influenced and inspired by you as you are by me, probably more so, because of their energy, their excitement, their openness. Yeah.
I feel that in having a studio in an artist collective with 9 other artists, you know, I can definitely see a massive difference in my quantity and quality of what I produce.
I agree.
From before that to after that. So to be around that number of children who have unharnessed creativity, like they're not, you know, bridled in by doubt or fear or, you know, I got to get a job that pays the bills.
They're just making art.
They're just living what they're experiencing.
And they don't really care what it looks like or have these like worries about putting it out into the world and being judged. And they're just playing with clay. They're just like, you know, playing with paint.
Actually, I do want to ask, do any students get jealous or compare themselves to other students in the class? Because I was giving a private art lesson to 2 girls, and one little girl, like 12 years old, said, "Mine's not as good as hers." And I was like, "No, that's not what it stop. Mm-hmm. That's not what it's about. Yours is wonderful and they're different and that's wonderful." And how does that happen? And if so, what do you tell your students when that does?
It certainly happens. And when I started teaching at Newfields, I taught kindergarten through 5th. Lincoln Street was 3rd through 5th. And I made an observation in Newfields that by 2nd grade, they were starting to put that lens on, you know, she's the creative one, he's the athletic one.
Wow.
By 2nd grade. When I got to Lincoln Street, I would say it's even younger, because I work closely with my colleague, Marnie Bird, who works kindergarten through 2nd in Exeter at Main Street. And it's really early. I don't know well, there's a million factors that influence that.
Yeah.
But I would say a major part of my work as a teacher, because, you know, the big goal is I want them leaving the program. I want them leaving the school year and the school in its entirety. I want them leaving knowing they're creative people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them come in not knowing that. It's heartbreaking. So I spend a lot of time just trying to open them up and keep them open.
Wow.
A lot. That was really the majority of the work. It's not about teaching how to mix color. It's not about
your color wheel.
And not about drawing a line. It's all about really knowing that you are a creative person.
You're allowed to express yourself.
And there's, you know, that whole thing, no mistakes, happy mistakes.
Happy little accident.
Happy little accident. It's like, just let that line take you someplace. Yeah. I say that a lot. So that line is there. Just where is it going to take you next? And if you don't like where it's going, I never let them erase. I wasn't a big, I was like, you just got to go with it or get a new paper or something. But that whole act of destroying something. And I would use this analogy. When you write, do you write two words and then scrutinize it and then erase it and write it again? So you write, right? You're just like, you write, and then you go back and you edit. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the same thing with visual art. There's a lot of practice sketches. There's a lot of just building muscle memory. There's a lot of just letting the line appear. I used to say, you need to just put an honest line on the paper. Your honest line is different than somebody else's honest line.
I love that.
That's great.
It makes me want to just, it makes me feel better about what I'm doing.
I'll be saying that at the studio the whole time when I'm working here full time. Laura, just an honest line.
I need to hear it. Say it again.
Yeah. And I believe that. Totally believe that. And I, you know, some of them were ready to hear it. Mm-hmm. Some of them are already too shut down. It's a very competitive world.
Oh, that just breaks my heart.
It's
hard. Very sad.
It's that part was sad. But, you know, when you had the successes and they're certainly there, that was enough. And even to listen to that 15-year-old boy say it was never fun, just the fact that he remembered it was fun.
Yeah.
And he came up to me at 15 years old in a public place with his buddies to say hi. I was like, okay, so art means something to him.
Yeah.
Or what he learned in that program means something to him.
And who knows where it will take him?
Who knows?
You know?
And the fact that I remembered him meant something to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's really sweet. I'm already reflecting on how quickly themes are developing out of our interviews. This is interview number 6, and this is already, I feel like, a theme of starting something and then just going wherever it takes you rather than having a plan in your head before you start.
Definitely.
We'll call this the hippie episode.
I like it.
The barefoot episode.
The barefoot hippie episode.
Yeah, you're right, though. We do, some episodes are driven in more of like the evolution of even finding the craft that you're in. Like your brother, he was a chef and it took him a while, but then once it was there, it was all about diving in and stuff. And
yeah. It was also very similar to how I was thinking of Beth and Rose, of course, in painting, but also the way that Raph talked about music was very similar. Mm-hmm. Like you just put a bunch of stuff out there and then you figure it out as you go.
And improv.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Do you ladies know about a place called Inventive Labs in Amesbury?
No.
I'm gonna put a little plug in for them.
No.
They're a place that totally believes in we're all creative people. And I think they call their students inventives instead of creatives.
Oh, neat.
But they work with students of all ages after 18 who just don't fit in other schools. Mm-hmm. And they help them kind of organize skills. But it's a really cool place to take a field trip there. It's in Amesbury.
We should go there.
It's a very cool place. I can give you contact numbers.
Yeah. Aside from, I think I mentioned, but this podcast isn't just artists or writers or musicians.
Right.
You know, we're also interviewing folks that are promoting the arts and, you know, doing the business side to get others into it. And
be a great podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we could set up an interview with the director there or something.
Definitely.
That sounds very interesting.
I like that you say creatives because I was always very careful with my students to not say they were artists.
Yes.
I didn't want to label them. I said, we're all creative people.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, we were in our first episode talking about how running a nonprofit organization and the way in which you invent ways to get people interested is being creative.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be visual. It's about inventing and originality and making something happen that affects others.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how you think.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
How you think?
Laura, they do a pitch competition at Inventive Labs.
Yes, they do.
Ooh, nice. We just, the company I work for, we did a pitch competition.
Oh, cool.
And guess what? An artist won it.
Yeah.
Would you ever put money on that horse? No, because you think, oh, there's no funding in the arts. But
that's cool.
Lyle and Karen of Big Ink, mm-hmm. the printmaking press.
Yeah, they were just up in Portsmouth.
Yep, at 3S.
Yeah.
I encouraged them to apply, and it was a $25,000 grant prize. And they beat out some software tech companies and some other companies. And
cool for them.
Yeah. I will say everyone who applied was amazing. I wasn't a judge or anything, but it seemed like it was a tough, close call. But I was, very proud and happy that an arts endeavor had made it to the forefront. And when they won, I think they were in utter shock, and it was a live event in front of an audience of 115 people. And it was it was very epic.
Wow.
I went to college with Lyle.
Wow.
And then at Chester. And mm-hmm. then he transferred to NIJA.
Chester College?
Chester College.
Well, I went when it was White Pines. That's why I transferred into NIJA. Coming from White Pines, they had the 2+2 program.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's my photo degree is from White Pines.
Oh,
before
my
it was just so the photo barn.
Chester College. Photo barn.
Yeah.
I took classes in the photo barn.
Yeah, so did I.
Oh, my gosh.
We had lots of parties in the photo barn.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, Lyle had the same path. Yeah. He did Chester, and then he went to NHIA.
Oh, we had the same path.
Yep. And that's where he met Karen. And
cool.
Fun. Wow, that's so crazy.
Small world.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Yep.
See, you think you know someone, you got a studio right across the way,
I know.
And it takes a podcast to dive deep.
Pull it out.
Oh, my gosh. You know what's funny? I applied to White Pines College, and I got in to Chester College. So they literally changed it right when I was, I was accepted, and then I started the semester, and it was a different college name, but an amazing school.
I liked it there.
It was awesome.
I was a commuter, and I just, I liked the place. I liked the vibe. I had a really awesome photo teacher.
Yeah.
Vince Chani. He was amazing. He's still amazing.
That's definitely another theme of the podcast is shout out to good art teachers.
Yeah, definitely.
Liz Buckley was my photo teacher there, mm-hmm. and she was just amazing. We're friends on Facebook, and I see her stuff that she does, and she sees mine, and it's nice.
Is she on the interview list?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, I have about 5 or 6 professors from college of different disciplines, a writer, a painter, a photographer. Yeah. So it'd be really great to do an episode where we just go back and talk to all my teachers from school.
That would be great.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I had no teaching credentials when I started teaching public school.
Oh, really?
I was hired on the alternative 4. It was a critical shortage. And I spoke to the principal, and I wasn't even wanting to apply for a job. The principal at Lincoln Street School, who I knew I was volunteering, he was like, you got to go and talk to this principal because I really think that you're perfect for the job. I'm like, yeah, but I'm still in school. I don't have my degree. I don't have any teaching background. So, but he hired me, and I'm like, lesson plans. How do I teach? And he's like, you'll be fine.
Were you scared when you first started?
Every single day I felt like an imposter.
Really? Yeah.
And I really did. And then I got to be silly. I would go in because I liked it so much and I had so much fun. Oh. I would go in and I would do this thing where I would pretend to put on my teacher hat. It's like, now I'm going to go pretend to be a teacher.
Oh my gosh, we really are kindred spirits.
I think we are.
Yeah. But after you pretend long enough, it just starts to go, man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's all good. Yeah.
Yep. I can totally vouch for that.
And I think I'm the type of teacher I am because I was not taught how to teach.
Yeah. You came in kind of more natural. And
I know art and I know kids.
Yep.
And I know how to keep them open. So that's what I was doing.
That's so great to hear.
The hell with those lesson plans and the curriculum and the Common Core and all that stuff. It's like, ugh.
The man.
Oh, the man. The man in the school. And the assessing elementary school children, grading them.
Ugh.
How are you assessing them? Well, I'm looking at their work. Looks pretty good. Nobody cried today. I'm going to give myself an A.
No one cut their ear off in despair.
Oh, exactly.
Their art sucks, but they're having a great time.
They're
and
joyful.
It's really pouring their heart out.
Oh, my God.
Hey, but when you're teaching little ones, they do cry.
Yeah.
When no one cried in a day, it was a good day because they do cry.
Same in my studio here. And I'm not even joking.
Actually, I know.
You know what I mean?
I know.
You know, when you're pouring your heart out into your work, it can bring up some stuff.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I love about art making is when I was at NHIA, I was in this great 3D foundations class, and a tragedy had just happened in my life, and I just used all the art making. And my friends called all my pieces cheaper than therapy one, cheaper than therapy two.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, and I always think you need to make art for some reason. And if it's not helping someone, I don't really know why the hell you're making it. So if it's helping me, then that's cool. And if it helps somebody else, it's even better.
It's incredibly important because that's such a useful, it's such a useful way to be able to express whatever's happening. But certainly, like, I don't really know what to do with myself or what is the best way to, like, get all those feelings out and process them. And, like, having something like art is an incredible way to do that.
Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, I went through a whole, you know, with my career counselor, like, what are you going to do? What are you going to be? And for a while, I was thinking of going into art therapy for children.
Yeah.
Because when I was a child, I lost my father, and the guidance counselor, after many sessions, gave me a block of clay, and it was my first kind of real experience with sculpture outside of the classroom, and it was something I could just get lost in and put everything I felt into it, and it was a huge impact on my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that would be a neat thing, and
definitely.
But the reason I didn't is because I kind of realized I'm sort of a sponge, if you will, and I don't think
for you.
I don't think I could emotionally handle children with trauma or, you know, severe emotions. I honor those people that do because I can't have the compartmentalization to handle it or the emotional capacity to handle it.
Oh, I hear you. My niece is a expressive arts therapist.
Really?
And we're super close and we talk a lot.
Oh.
Put her on the list. Adrienne Kress.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Awesome. I would love to speak to someone who does that.
Oh, she's fabulous. And we talk a lot about, I will say, at public school, we have such a high need for social emotional support for our students that, you know, there is lots of students who just put it in their arts. They put it in the music, or they put it in the movement in gym, or they put it in hiding in the library and reading a book quietly, no talking.
Yes, Sarah.
But I spent a lot of time, and I happily did so, you know, just talking kids off the ledge.
Yeah.
You know, really just put a line on the paper. If you don't want to do this, I could go through the whole process, but the point of the story being with my niece, I would come away from those times with my kids feeling kind of buoyed because I could see a way through.
Mm-hmm.
She would come away from those times with her clients feeling totally drained because it was a different, like, they bounced off me. She absorbed it.
Yep.
You know, it was hard, it was super hard. It's really hard work. I my hat's off to all who can do it as well.
Seriously. It's very much needed. I wish they had an emotional health class in elementary school because there's, so especially for men, there's so many people that don't feel like, you know, they think that emotion is, you know, vulnerability is a weakness when it's really a strength.
It's a big strength.
Yeah.
Laura and I were also just talking about the importance of having like a place to cry at the office.
Yes.
Because my print room upstairs is my crying place. Sarah's like, I want a crying place. And like, you can use it anytime you want.
And don't you know when you're really like things are not right, you just need to cry?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Crying is amazing.
Yes.
Very cathartic.
It's so important.
Very cathartic.
I think we are working towards an emotional health class in elementary school.
That would be wonderful.
Social emotional curriculum is like the hot topic right now because our kids are a mess. I'll tell a story, okay?
Yeah.
It's Thursday before Christmas. Really tough fourth grade class. Tough in that a couple of them are what we consider trauma kids.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the trauma kids was totally in her own mind, crawling around the carpet while we were trying to check in. I do a circle check in, following an invisible thread. Okay, I'm just going to not pay any attention to that because we got to check in, get going. I know when I redirect, she's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then another one of the children, he was literally, he put his feet under the rug, then his ankles were under the rug. And by the time we got done with check-in, that boy was under the rug up to his neck.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to ignore that. We're just going to check in real fast. We're going to get making. So we get making, and it's mayhem. And it's a small class, but it was a class that took so much energy just to hold for 45 minutes. So finally, they're working. And they're doing their famous paintings or whatever they're doing. And they're just, it's good. The energy, the vibe is good. And I'm walking around the room, checking in. And then I hear, on the 12th day of Christmas, I strangled her with rope. And then it went down and down and down. And the final, and I'm listening going, I cannot be hearing this. And then the final thing was, and a dumpster to throw the bodies in.
Wow.
Oh my God. I totally lost it on this boy. And he's not even like, he's from a nice family. He's like a nice kid, really high functioning, nice kid. And I'm like, what was that? He's like, I wrote it myself. I'm like,
oh boy.
Like, that is heinous. That is horrible. Like, I really was not my finest teaching moment because I just yelled at him. But I also yelled some really harsh things to him. Because I just, you know, we lost someone in the past year who was strangled and shoved in a closet, but I lost it on him. Like, that's what we're dealing with in public school. Like, that's a nice, emotionally stable boy.
So the kids that are having a rougher time have experienced some tough life lessons early on.
It's tough.
What are they emoting out to their other classmates?
It's tough. And it's hard. I feel for kids today. I didn't have that type of life growing up.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I feel for them that it's 24/7 connected to all the information you could possibly want. It's killing them.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's killing them.
I agree.
Yeah, this instant gratification, you know, I grew up not having that, but even as an adult, I feel like, what, I'm not getting a response right now? Ignoring
my
messages.
That, I see what's delivered in red. Why haven't they answered?
Yeah.
And I'm not even like that.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I guess I am.
Oh, well, it's kind of just ingrained.
It is.
It's ingrained. Whereas when I was a kid, you know, you call your friend, you leave a message with their mom, and you maybe hear back that night, or you see him the next day at school, and whatever, you move on, you know?
Yeah. We don't take the time to, like, curate our responses the same way that we used to.
We don't. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's hard too because my phone is really useful. Like right now I have the interview questions up on my phone. So like it's really handy, but I wish that I could like relying on it for work and relying on it for things that it's useful for makes sense. And then I wish that I could just like put it down when I'm not relying on it for something that's actually useful to me.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. To be more selective in how we use it
without
becoming dependent.
Can I have like the good of it without the bad of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we need to teach the entire culture. But we certainly need to teach it to our kids really young. And, you know, so my same niece, Adrian, has two little boys, and one of them is in second grade. And he's had very strong limits, and he doesn't have a phone. Like, all my kids have phones in third grade. Seriously, they all do. And it's craziness. And he doesn't watch a lot of TV. He doesn't play, he certainly doesn't play games, not violent games ever. And he talked to me one day about a month ago, and he just said, I understand, but I just wish I knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
So it makes him the other.
He's isolated.
And that's heartbreaking too.
I know.
So he doesn't speak their language. And I'm glad he doesn't, but at the same time, that's a hard thing to live through.
He might be bullied, just feeling that isolation, you know, he's going to be not in on the joke.
Yeah. It's a hard thing.
Yeah.
It's good preparation, though, for when he's like 27 and older, because at that point, you have no idea what the kids are talking about either.
You're just like, so true.
What is yeet? I just don't get that one.
Oh, boy. I actually have my daughters and a couple of other young people giving me translations. I'm like, I'll text them. You got to help me with this. They're all yeeting. What does it mean?
What is it? I've never even heard of it.
I'm a YouTuber.
Jeez Louise.
They all go, yeet.
I think it means to like chuck something.
Good God.
Like if you throw something sort of violently, you yeeted it. But sometimes it's used in context where that doesn't work. I don't really know.
And sometimes it's a greeting. They just yeet at each other.
They just yeet.
And tomorrow will be something different. It changes so fast.
I have a friend who's a science teacher, and I heard her sort of like, she's about my age, so she's probably in her late 20s or early 30s, and she was talking about sort of translating some of the things that the kids are saying in school, and she's like, okay, here's what I think this one means, and I'm like, this is amazing to listen to, like an adult's interpretation of a young person's weird slang.
Yeah, I'm lost. I don't have any connection at all. I just know babies and adults, like, I don't know anything in between.
I'm happy that I won't have to know too much more of that.
Right. Because I turn that faucet off.
I do need to know that when I teach.
Yeah. You need to know what context kids are saying things. Yeah. And
is this an inappropriate thing that I should be yelling at them for? Or is this fine?
Or because they put it in their artwork, too. I mean, they'll put things in their artwork, language or gestures or things that might be weapons.
Okay. That's an interesting thing is as an art teacher, This interview, I wanted to focus more on what you create, but this whole...
It's just too interesting.
We're going to dive into all
of it. I'm happy to talk about this because it's important to me.
It is. It's interesting. I think it's so fascinating. What kind of role has censorship played as a teacher and not, the crossing the line of, not censoring someone, but also not having them, they're kids and this is public and what's appropriate?
Hard thing for me because I don't believe in censoring them. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is some... it's a healthy response to put it on paper. Like if they were going to put blood and guts and strangling somebody and whatever they're doing, there's something about getting it out. Mm-hmm. However, there's policy and there can be no blood, there can be no weapons, there can be no violence depicted in their visual art. And I will say that one of the ways I've handled that is I've had kids just push it and push it and push it and say censorship, censorship, censorship. And so I'll sit with them and say, yep, I get it, but we reserve the right to censor you in elementary school. Mm-hmm. However, come sit with me and let's look at this art book, because artists have used documenting scenes of war and violence throughout culture. And I show them, that famous painting with the, we'll have to look this one up. It's a Spanish painting. He's got this, it's an execution. He's got the man has his hands up. And I show them war portrait paintings, and I show them all the bloody gory stuff. All of it. It's like, this is real art. This is important art. This is something that you should be aware of. And if you're making art that's documenting something that's important to you, you should make that art. But you just can't make it here.
Yeah.
But look at this book.
Yes.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Is that blood? Yes. They're killing him. Yeah. Yeah. So some of them just have to see it, I guess.
Yeah. It's tackling things they're thinking about. Yeah,
and I also want to be honest with them. I don't like censoring you, but I have to because that's my role in elementary school, public school. That's all there is to it.
And that's kind of a good lesson also for them to see. Like, you have to do things you don't like.
I agree.
Have to play along with the system sometimes. You don't like brushing your teeth. You still have to do it.
Yep.
Or you don't, and then you're gross and no one wants to kiss you. But, like, you learn those things, I guess.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, as our philosophies of teaching change, because we are changing to a competency-based education system, which, you meet a competency and then you go on to the next. And it brings in a lot of different ways of teaching through projects and choice presentation. And it's all good change. The school needs the change. However, what it's breeding is a student who says, I can choose. I can do it. I met that competency. And it's great. It's great to have the empowerment of the student. I believe in that. But in the visual arts world, they're coming back with, I didn't choose that. Why do I have to do that? It's like, well, you need to learn the skill. I'm fighting with them a lot about learning the skill. And in order for me to teach the skill to 25 kids 6 times a day with the money and material and time I have to do it this way. So I can see that censorship piece is going to be pushed as they continue to give student choice. Mm-hmm. So good luck with my successor. Good luck, Ellie. Have fun with that one.
as taxing as that must be, it's probably better than the kids who just don't try or give up.
Or are so compliant.
Yes. Yeah, that too. Like, I fulfilled my quota, like little accountants already just... follow the lines.
Another thing I say when I'm teaching is, creativity lives on the edge of chaos. So in order for us to be creative, we have to go there. But we can't step totally into the chaos or we can't manage.
Yep.
So we need to find that balance, like 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
That's me. We were talking earlier about how I'm such a mess, but I'm also producing.
I have to be productive. Like that. Yeah.
Beautiful chaos.
Yeah. Beautiful chaos. Yep. It is. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And that's a good life lesson for them too. To learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that I always ask is whether or not you think this art bug, this creativity thing is genetic. So it sounds like maybe.
I think we're all creative. I do.
I agree.
I just think sometimes it just gets closed off.
Mm-hmm. It gets closed off a bunch.
Yeah.
Are you the one who teaches the I Suck at Art?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, I know. I tell people about that all the time.
You gotta come.
A lot of people say, I suck at art. And I'm like, well, there's a class for you.
Yeah.
And the whole point is that you don't.
Right.
Yeah. Love it. Oh, my gosh. I love it.
Yeah.
I would love to do it.
Well, we'll get you going.
Yeah.
We'll get you in the next session.
Yeah.
And it's great because I teach the 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade curriculum. And It's a blast. We have a blast. We print, make, and sculpt, and it's a good time.
Who usually attends the classes?
Mostly people that are, my people have all been anywhere from mid-30s to 60. It's just
That's fantastic.
Big range. Some couples.
Yeah.
I might offer it as a couples thing, you know.
Interesting.
So I've had two sets of couples come.
Do you find it's otherwise mostly women?
Except for the couples, yes.
Like a good therapist, I like to go back to your childhood. So let's talk about if you had moments where you experienced creativity as a kid and sort of like what that looked like and where you feel like your art and your inspiration came from.
So I'm from a family of five. And
wow.
I'm the fourth child. I'm the youngest girl.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you two?
No. My mother is one of eight, though. And then, of course, she turned around and only had two kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's crazy.
It's a busy family.
It's a lot.
So I would say that my most creative times were just exploring the woods. I would go out.
Me too.
Me too.
The woods. Oh my gosh, we're all kindred spirits.
I feel like I even said that in the in the intro episode that for us, I mean, we weren't allowed to watch TV until five, and the internet wasn't invented
yet.
And so we just spent all this time like walking around the woods and being in nature and climbing trees and climbing on rocks and maybe like trying to build a fort, which were so-so.
Oh, I made a ton of forts. We had a farmer's junkyard near our house, because I lived in western rural Maine up on a mountain, so there was this old farmer's junkyard that we really weren't supposed to play in, but we totally did, and that's where my love of found objects came from. And I would make these little like lean-to forts, and I would take glass bottles and make it as the perimeter.
Fun.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It was awesome.
I would love to have had that. Now, we had something different but similar. We grew up behind a abandoned lumber yard, so you would go down our rock wall. And there would be the edge piles of lumber, tons and tons of them. So we had free lumber. And if you went through those piles, it was an absolute dream as a kid. So we had unlimited lumber, and the actual lumberyard building burnt down. But the nails didn't burn. So there were piles of nails.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's really cool.
So we had land behind our property. It's wetland, but when the dry seasons, all the kids would go and we'd bring the lumber, and we built numerous tree forts. Cost us nothing but time. And it was, we actually had the streets named, and we had a cabin. We had three decker real tree houses. Only a couple people broke their arms falling.
Oh, that's,
but, you know, wasn't me. It was just one of my sisters.
Collateral damage.
Yeah. It was a dream. And I used to love being in the woods and pretending to cook dinner. I would like find greens for the salad, and like, you know, the rotting wood, that would be the chicken. It's silly. But, you know, even back then, I could see things that weren't, I could use things for something that they weren't intended to be used for. But as far as like creating, like people think of visual arts creating, there was no materials. We were, you know, we had plenty, but we didn't have extras. So I, you know, the creativity came in how I saw the world. Yeah.
Are any of your siblings, do they label themselves as creatives?
Actually, all of my siblings label themselves as non-creatives.
Really?
And like, I'm constantly debating that with them about, you know, you are a creative person, you know, yours comes out in how you write policy in your company, and yours comes out in how you cook, and yours comes out in how you dress yourself. And
this is a question, do they label you with stereotypes as an artist or a creative? Like, oh, that's a foofy artist thought you have there or something. Like, my family does that to me in a joking, humorous way, but. Yeah,
a little passive aggressive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they'll also come back with, I wish I could see the world the way you see the world.
Ah,
because I don't. And I think that's beautiful and sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should make them take your I Suck at Art class.
My sister came. She only went to two of the classes, though. She skipped the last two. she was overwhelmed.
Aw. It's great that she made an attempt and did experience some.
She did.
Yeah.
She did. In fairness to her, she had started working in the middle of the class, so it was getting, the hours were late for her. So I'm going to help her out with that one, because I think she was enjoying it.
That's good.
She did not feel successful, though, which I thought was really sad.
Yeah.
That's a question we actually have.
About defining success.
Yeah. As an artist, what is success to you? How do you define it? And do you feel like you've achieved that?
Oh, it's such a you know, I feel like I'm really just stepping into it, even though I've always felt that I'm a creative person for so long. I've never really defined myself as an artist. It's been a long time. I was a photographer, and I worked as a photographer, and I was a teacher. But lately I've been saying, no, I'm a creative person. And I have to tell you, though, coming into this studio, it's the same thing. I felt like an imposter. I'm like, what am I doing here? I just moved in all my and I'm gonna like all these little boxes. Yeah. Why am I here with all these like awesome artists? And then I just said, cut it out. You just need to stop that.
Oh,
that
give me a break.
That was that judge coming in, you know, but I know my judge well. I've named her.
Oh yeah?
Her name is Bertha. And when she gets in my face, I just talk her down.
Good.
I'm like, yeah, we're not going there.
Get out of here, Bertha.
Yeah, you hit the road, Bertha.
Is she named in honor of someone who ever made you doubt yourself?
She's named in honor of my great-grandmother, who I never knew, but she was pretty horrible to my grandmother. So I don't, it's hard to dislike someone you've never met, but I do dislike her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very judgmental. So she's a good name for a judge.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But success, you know, I think if I can make something that makes somebody think, that's successful.
Mm-hmm.
Or make somebody happy. I really want the work to bring something to someone. I don't want it just to be good looking. I don't want it to just adorn. I don't want it because it matches something in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And my work will change because I feel like I can pretty much put it into it now. I had to put a filter on it as a public school teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not going to filter it. So let's see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What an exciting time.
I know. And I said that to Rose, and she was like, let it out, Deb.
And I got a front row view. I'm right across the hall from you.
You
this
do.
This is awesome.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about artist's block. Is that how you guys call it?
Sure.
You artist people, like creative writer's block,
yeah,
creative
definitely.
Block. And how you overcome that if you've ever experienced it.
I do experience it. I experience it by overstimulating myself. I just bring it all out, move it all around, put it all back. It's like, okay, you made nothing. And so the thing I have to do is just make something and just call it done because it's never done.
Mm.
And I just need to say, okay, this one's done and go on to another one.
Calling things done is so hard.
Oh, it's very hard.
You could always keep tweaking.
Always. Yep. Yeah.
Is that true for you too, Laura? How do you get over artist block?
I complain a lot to my husband about it. That's part of the process.
Does that work?
Sometimes just hearing myself talk about it, and then I think, what a brat I'm being. Like, I'm such a fortunate, lucky person to be able to have a life that allows me to do this thing that I love. And then I think it's just the manual pushing through. Like,
I
it's
agree.
The actual force and kinetic energy of moving your body and just throwing something down. And I think the other part is giving myself some slow thinking time to really think about what I'm trying to achieve and what my purpose is for doing it. Like, my latest stuff, it just came from a lot of pun reflection. It's a series about water. About, like,
where's the pun noise?
Ding, ding, ding. About what I'm trying to really, like, what I really want to get out to people. And that kind of emerged. And then it just really started flowing. I can't stop it with the puns, but
ding.
It just really is like, gee whiz, you know, just happening. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. But I have it. I do get creative block like a ton. It
so
happens.
It really feels like it's the same thing as like getting over procrastinating something, like just do it and start doing something.
Mm-hmm.
As cliche as that really is the bottom line.
Yeah.
Just make it.
Yeah.
Just get it done.
When I'm procrastinating something, if I commit myself to like spend 10 minutes on it, and if you still don't want to do it, then fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like if after those 10 minutes, you're like, yeah, okay, I'm sort of in the groove now. I always am.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just start it.
And then you thank your past self like, good, I needed that kick in the butt to do it.
Yeah.
Laura, do you have any studio habits that you have to do before you start to make?
That's a great question. That is a great question.
Because I know I do.
Oh, my gosh. This is pretty sad, but I like to have a little nibble on something. I like to eat. Like when I get here,
yeah.
I think I like to handle what I need to handle to get out of the way for a few hours.
Yeah.
Like when I get here, I like to have a little snack. What a chubby kid thing to say. This isn't how I want to present myself, but
snack
I like to
first.
Eat. Well, I like to like get my drink set up, have a little snack, and maybe it's the fuel I need.
I love that you followed it with the snort.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, and like go to the bathroom, get my drink, get my, you know, just have a little something to eat, and then I don't think about it. I'm not like, oh, I'm all of a sudden hungry and I need to, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have any like physiological excuses to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Exactly.
No distraction.
That's interesting.
I always like to make sure I put on the right music for the right vibe.
Absolutely.
That is definitely a very strong habit in studio practice. If it's quiet in here, I'm dead. Like if you come in here and it's quiet, it's because I just died and didn't get a chance to put on the music yet, because there's no way I don't have music or some sound coming on.
I have to work to music.
Mm-hmm.
I always do. Yeah.
What other studio habits do you have?
I'm like you. I need to get a snack.
Wow.
And I need to have something to drink, my coffee or water.
Yeah.
And then I'm still trying to figure out where I put things in this studio because they're so tucked away.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm like getting everything out and like, where is it? Where is it? It's getting better because I'm here more.
Mm-hmm.
But everything has to be in place and the music has to be right. The temperature has to be right.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I can just delve in. And then I need a couple hours because you start and you stop. And
yes,
I need the time.
I hate it when I know there's a, and this happens a lot. I know I have to leave by, you know, in 3 hours and 10 hours and whatever it is. 10 hours, obviously not as much pressure. But if I know I'm only here for an hour or two, it's like, even though it's not true, in my head, I think, what's the point? Yeah. But it's hard when you have that end time, you know, to.
Yeah. And we need to have more art nights together.
Oh, my gosh.
We need to schedule that because the little tiny taste of it I had.
I know,
with you,
that was so fun.
We need to do a lot more of that.
Yeah.
I look forward to that.
Yeah. Working in tandem with someone else, either on the same project, collaborating, or just in the same vicinity is excellent. When Dawn Amy is here, she's down in the basement. You know, I don't even hear her, but she pops up and tells me something about her project. And then I show her a painting and she says, oh my God, you should try this. And it's
so good.
Yeah. The energy here is
so good.
Insane. It's so cool.
Yeah. We're really, really, really lucky.
Yeah.
I would never leave here. It's so good.
I know. I was thinking about that. Like when I finally have kids, like I will do everything in my power not to give this place up.
Mm-hmm.
Rose, are you listening?
Yeah, when I have a baby, discount my rent. Terrible thing to say. But I'm going to be poor because I'm going to have a baby someday.
Hey, I can help you. I'll nanny. I love children.
Oh, yeah. Take my kid.
Yeah.
While
we can work it out.
The studio baby.
I love that.
Yeah, we'll have a studio baby.
Aw.
Should we do rapid fire?
Yeah, I think we're about that time. So we're going to be doing rapid fire questions.
Ooh,
rapid
exciting.
Fire.
Okay.
Which historically haven't been that speedy. They're not as rapid as they sound. We like to think they could be, and there are a few that are one word
slightly
answers.
Quicker questions.
Yeah, yeah, like one word. But yeah, we've definitely, but that's okay. But
with the exception of what's your favorite color, which is the only one that's ever fast.
Yeah, that segment of those questions.
Yeah.
So we'll start with what's your favorite color?
Depends on the day. Yellow, sometimes green, always black.
Oh, nice.
I like that.
You never wear black, though, that I see.
I know, it's funny because all my clothes are black,
really?
But I guess I don't wear them here.
Favorite sound?
Just music.
Yeah.
Music and the ocean.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. What's your favorite scent?
Right now, the honeysuckle is in bloom in my yard, and that's fabulous. Although, fresh cut grass.
Oh, yeah.
That smells like productivity to me.
Ooh.
You've actually got off your butt and done something.
Yeah, mowed the lawn.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bring in the scent of fresh cut grass.
Yeah.
I'll just waft it through.
Get something done.
Yeah. There
I
you
like
go.
It.
What's your favorite texture?
Oh, texture. Probably the bark of a tree.
Oh, that's a great one.
Ooh, that's a really good one.
Yeah. As all children of nature here.
I feel absolutely.
We love that one. If you could go back in time to when you were first making art, what advice would you give yourself as a young creator?
Just keep creating. Don't have those long blocks when you didn't really believe you could create.
Mm-hmm.
because I had those for long years at a time.
Is there one piece of work that stands out to you as the best representation of you as an artist?
You know, it's probably more in writing. And it's probably buried in a journal.
One of these infamous journals.
Yes.
Wow, she's doing great. These are pretty rapid answers. Yeah, I like
them. I'm really impressed.
Yeah. Best museum you've ever visited. I know it's a hard one.
I really like the Peabody Essex.
Oh.
But I'm going to just take it into a different direction and tell you the best show I've ever been to by far was at the ICA in Boston. It was Tara Donovan.
Oh, cool. I love the ICA.
Do you know Tara Donovan's work?
No.
Put her on the list.
Phenomenal sculptor from Everyday Objects.
Oh, cool.
Check her out.
She's
amazing. The work is pretty outstanding.
That's awesome. Have you ever thought about quitting making art?
Never, never, never.
I knew it.
Great answer. I know. Most people. Has anyone ever made you doubt yourself as an artist? Has anyone ever, given you harsh judgment and deeply wounded you in that way?
Yes. And I couldn't really tell you who, because I don't really know if it's one person or if it's just kind of a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there have been times when I've doubted, when I've been like, why? You're really not that good. But I let that go. I to get rid of that.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I know. That is hard. Favorite sound effect?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe a boing, oing, oing, oing.
Boing, oing. With an echo. I love it. So we've got our tradition. We close out every episode by the three of us saying at the same time the same phrase as a nod to, you know, sending off others into the world, putting that inspiration out there. It's super dorky and it's adorable.
I love it.
So we're doing it.
Okay.
Show us your creative guts. Thank you so much to Deb. It was such a pleasure to sit down and talk with her because though I am a studio mate, I really got to know a lot more about her that I never knew. And she's just a fascinating, inspiring person. And I really appreciate you spending time with us, Deb.
And I look forward to signing up for her next I Suck at Art class.
Yeah.
Right?
Hopefully some of our listeners sign up too. And, you should also follow Art Up Front Street on Facebook because they will be the ones promoting that class when it is running again.
Yes. If you haven't already followed Art Up Front Street on Facebook, definitely do. And Instagram too.
Yeah. What are you, in the Stone Ages? Go follow it. Jeez.
If you want to hear more from us, Creative Guts is available on all major podcast platforms. And we are also on Facebook. If you're not already following us there, we're sharing lots of fun selfies and lots of ways to get to know our guests better.
That's right. And as always, like, subscribe, share, follow, all those buzzwords. Yeah. All right. Do you want to ask the next question, Sarah?
Sure, dear. Are you recording?
Yes.
Is this recording? There's lots of stuff that you have to edit out. Blah, 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 blah.
Thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome.
You're always looking out for me and my time management.
So.